Hey guys, thanks to all of you who are still tuning in, and anybody new that stumbled upon this, thank you. This is Tobin Osuski, the Art of Flying podcast. So I'm going to take a turn. I've taken a couple turns with this as I've moved to different places. When I was in the New York City metropolitan area, I was doing interviews, asking people about specific heaven-like and alternate consciousness type experiences they've had throughout their life and how that's impacted them and their goals and their vision for their dreams. So I've been in Costa Rica for about a year and a half, a little more than a year and a half now, living in the Central Pacific coast between cities Jaco and Capos, which are very popular tourist towns. I'm just outside a town named Parita, which is a very Tico town or local town, and I'm actually in an area where there's indigenous tribes and farmers, family farmers who have been here for 10 up to 50 generations as far as they can remember, individual people I speak to. So things have changed significantly for my life, and I think it's a perfectly appropriate time after I've had about a year of solitude here working on a small farm, getting my life started for my family's future one day, to reflect on everything that I've been through in my life that has led me here. And I want to share these experiences, these specific experiences, that the first one I'm going to share today, because these are stories that when people hear about my life, either through somebody else, these are the stories that they ask about. And also stories of my life that I can relate to things that people have shared with me in intimate moments, in trusted moments, in not moments we speak about on podcasts and not moments we speak about in gyms publicly or broadcasting on television when we get opportunities. So I just want to become really raw with this podcast. That's been the idea in the first place, was to really cover things, ideas and thoughts and, express feelings and hopes that not many other people are expressing, but also that I'm not expressing anywhere else in my daily life, because I owned a gym, so I had to have my gym face on. When I worked for other people's companies, you have to fit into these molds of, you know, the company's mission and the company's characteristics. And, nowadays, it's 2022 in the United States, everybody just speaks their nonsense opinion about everything. But there was a time where there was a time and place that you would speak about politics and you would speak about religion and you would speak about family, and you just wouldn't do that publicly and embarrassingly, immaturely, the way it's kind of going on now, and everybody's just saying, this is everything about me and who I am, and even if it's a lie or if I don't understand myself, I'm still going to share it with you. But, you know, it's brought the United States and the world, for that matter, to a dangerous place, and I'm hoping to provide a little something different. To be completely honest, I'm going to be speaking about the obscure parts of my life, the traumatic parts of my life, situations I've been in that have been out of my control entirely, that I had to suffer through and figure out why it was happening, and then at the end of it, heal myself and figure out how to get to the point where I would be empowered enough as a human being and as an emotional being and spiritual being to be able to visualize my dreams and actually make them happen and not let the traumas and pain I've been through and suffered, some of which continue on and on emotionally and physically, they don't become hurdles, but instead they become trampolines or accelerators to making those dreams come true. Because here's what it really comes down to, all these stories I'm going to be sharing, basically to tell myself and to you, remind all of us, that today, now, is really the only moment we have. And if we're dwelling on things in the past or having anxiety about things that haven't occurred yet in the future, relationships that will be repaired, scars that will heal, wounds that will heal internally and externally, regrets that might be able to be resolved somehow, we're not being present. Any of these other thoughts, we're taking ourselves out of enjoying life the way it's supposed to be experienced, which is through the infinite amount of senses that we have, known and unknown to us, to interpret this reality and grow from it. To grow from it. That's ultimately what this is all about. So I'm going to bounce around my life timeline through these next few or dozen episodes or however long this goes. But this is my story. I'm going to share my story, and it's going to be about me. I'm not interviewing anybody. I'm not discussing subjects that I've learned about. I'm discussing my personal experiences. I'm going to take you through some of the sensory inputs that I felt and the things that have transformed within me as a result, and how I see the world now. And ultimately, all of these things, however terrifying and painful, have all led me to where I am now, which at 37 years old, I am in heaven, paradise, all day, every day. I am happy. I see and feel myself smiling every chance that I, you know, glance in the mirror or a window reflection or just kind of reflect upon my state. I'm in a constant state of, you know, mouth and eye smile. It's kind of my resting thing, where from the United States, there is actually a term, resting bitch face, that people use for their own faces because it's just how they are. And it's a reflection of the unhappiness that exists pervasively all over the United States. And it's almost spreading around the world to places. But to be in a place like this and to live the perfect life that I've always dreamed about, and I pinch myself and I speak to myself about this daily. It's like we are, and my dogs, I should say, we are so lucky to be here. And even if it lasts for another day or 100 years, like, I hope I never feel this feeling of being so grateful and so lucky to have found my way to this perfect place for me on this planet during this lifetime. And I can't imagine living in even better reality. I really can't. And all of these experiences that I'm going to get into in a moment, well, episode by episode, but a significant one in this first moment, are going to be stepping stones to taking me to this destination where I am now. So I'm retracing these steps that brought me here that seemed like horrible, horrible things, or just weird, crazy, and freaky things that happened that actually were, you know, the, how should I say, bumpers on the side of the, you know, at a bowling rink, what do you call it, bowling alley, sorry, skating rink, at a bowling alley, when you're not a good bowler, you can put up those bumpers, and it kind of leads you to hit the pins at the end. And I guess these things were like my bumpers. Every time I was, you know, kind of losing my way a little bit, something happened and pushed me right into the direction so I would end up here. So, if you're listening to this episode, I'm not going to be repeating this introduction again. I'm just going to be getting right into the stories. But the point here is, sometimes, and I've learned this through my life path and where I am now and looking back, that it seems, not just sometimes, but most times, the things that seem to hurt us and harm us the most are actually protecting us from something even worse, or they are guiding us in the direction opposite of those things. And I'll explain episode by episode kind of what that means, because sometimes we get off the main road and we get down these side roads and these tangents of reality, and it's not where we're meant to be. And if our heart and our spirit is actually guiding us to where we are meant to be, which I believe everybody's is, somehow, some way, the road will reroute itself and something will happen that will redirect you back onto your proper path. No matter how far you try to use your free will and choice to stray, or life situations themselves put you in a position where you're not at your best and you're not seeing clear and you're not on your path, life has shown me that it always checks and balances and puts us to where we need to be, so that we're growing and experiencing this journey the way we designed it with the creator and however you see it, or if it's just random and we just popped up here, well, you're walking down a path. It might not be the right path for you, but trust me, sooner or later, life is going to put you on that right path, and you're going to have to open your eyes to it and live it and see why we were put here. I just happened to have this awakening experience time after time that finally has led me to perfection and paradise and a place where I can see myself living every day of my life happily for the rest of my days of my life. And I hope that somebody wishes to join me here one day, romantically. We could start a family. Who knows how it'll work, but I've never felt confident that I could say that out loud, because even though I had things and I owned a house and I had a business and I had this and I had that in the United States, I didn't feel like I was in any place where I could start a family or be dedicated to a marriage or anything like that, simply because I was working so much and I was still living this kind of free, open life where I was exploring and I wanted to go different places and here. And now I just found the perfect place. And anybody that, you know, has similar interests and is into me is going to realize this is the perfect place as well. And hopefully, like those DNA strands winding up and the, you know, Kundalini winding up as the two serpents, we meet each other here at the top someday soon. But that said, just a little inspiration and shows you that I am not fully satisfied in perfection here because I'm alone. And that's something I think my life path is leading me to, is I've been alone most of my life, and now I'm more alone than I ever have been, because I've kind of separated from my family. My father passed away. My mother and brother don't seem to want to speak to me because I made this big move and it disrupted something within them that they weren't, I don't know, they couldn't understand and they couldn't relate to and equate to. And that's for them. But as a result, it's left me in this super intense state of solitude where I've had to really reflect on these things. So getting right into it now, the first thing I'm going to discuss is dying in a car accident. And for any of you that know my story with the car accident, I'm going to go into a little more detail here so you can understand what I felt and what I experienced firsthand. This was going to be the first chapter of a book I wrote that was more like kind of like an autobiography. But I was planning, and I have written it, I just plan to embed a ton of mystical, alchemical knowledge, you know, wisdom from all the studies I've accumulated, tons of science, intelligence, investment, things that I've, you know, studied and mastered for years and learned from other people who have mastered them for lifetimes. And I just wanted to share this all in this book, and it got a little too much. So I have that broken down in different parts that's going to be released. And I figured now's the day of the podcast. And my dogs are getting a little excited. There's some horses coming by, and this happens. They will calm down. But I do have four dogs here now, so they get crazy. So anyway, dying in this accident. The date was June 24th, 2003. I was supposed to graduate high school June 26th, 2 days after this accident happened. So, didn't have any more sports. School finished for the day. I jump in my car. I drive to, you know, a buddy's house. We were all hanging out after school. It's, you know, almost summer. Probably drinking a couple beers, maybe not yet, but maybe smoking a little weed and just hanging out. We were going to go up to a car shop in Peekskill, New York. And there was four of us. And I'll just leave names out because it is what it is. But the four of us got into a car. I was sitting behind the driver. There was, you know, a guy next to me, and then two taller guys in the front seats. And we took off about 30 minutes later. You know, it's about dinner time now, 5:30, 6 p.m. We start dozing off a little bit because it's going to be a longer ride, like an hour and a half more. So we're sitting back, closing our eyes a bit, dusk. and I get a call from home, and it was, they were asking, guys, calm down. They were asking if I was going to be home for dinner, and I said no, and explained what I was doing, and that was that, and hung up the phone, and I kind of just closed my eyes again. And no more than a moment later, as I recall, in distance, it was less than a mile away from me hanging up the phone, the driver of the car decided that he was going to start racing at rush hour with a highway full of people and cars, not going very fast, maybe 50, 60 miles an hour. And when we came to consciousness, in a sense, like the guy next to me and I both perked up and like, what's going on? The driver had begun to lose control and was going about 100 miles an hour and had driven up behind a car that was going speed limit. The car next to it was going about speed limit, and there was no way to get out because there was a guardrail to the left. So this guy was not a very good driver and didn't know how to downshift or use his brakes properly, and slammed into the guardrail to the left, thinking that was his best option. And that sent the car into a 180-degree spin, and we drifted across the highway, literally just sliding as if we were on a water slide. And as soon as we hit the end of the road, the pavement, where the dirt and gravel starts, the car finally caught and started rolling, obviously going about 90 miles an hour at this point. And we flipped, I would estimate, about 6 or 7 times, and the people who saw it from outside said the same. And we landed up on this bank of a small kind of water runoff on the side of the highway, and then rolled back down into the pit, like the little river stream, maybe 3 or 4 more times. They said the total was about 10 flips. And now the car, which is completely mangled up into the size of a, you know, crushed toaster because of all the flips at that speed, is upside down, spilling out scalding hot gasoline, and I'm the only one stuck in the car, hanging upside down, like trapped inside, everything's crushed in around me. Just to go over very quickly how that happened, the guy next to me, that was seated next to me, somehow wound up on his feet, 30 meters away from the car, uninjured, unharmed, no dirt, no blood, nothing on him. People from outside of the accident who saw it happening on the highway, of which there were many, we could call them witnesses or observers, said that they didn't know how he got out. Logistically, forensically, in the car, there was no way he could have exited. The car was too small. We were in a small 2-door Acura Integra. There was no possible way, and you could find pictures of the car on the internet if you search for him. There's no way that he could have exited the car the way we understand physics. So as the car finishes flipping, the two guys in the front both crawl out of the shattered windows at this point, unharmed. Like, literally unharmed. The one guy wore a sling on his arm for like a week because his arm was sore, and that was all that happened, and they walked out fine. So now I'm crushed, pinned, stuck inside this car, which is about to blow up, and all I personally remember was a feeling of lightness. I didn't feel anything. After the first moment of impact we had on one of those little reflector poles on the side of the highway, and as soon as we hit that, I must have soon after, in the first flip, suffered some type of concussion, which turned into severe traumatic brain injury. But the car did roll on my head about 10 times, and there was a lot of other stuff that happened to my head, which I'll go into next. But the next thought or memory I have is being about 30 feet above the car, and I remember vividly looking over my left shoulder, and I saw some kind of mangled thing on the ground, and there was a dark-skinned woman sitting by the edge of it with her hands inside. And next thing I remember after that was being in the hospital with all the lights and people staring at me and like crying, and people that I'd never seen cry in my life crying, looking at me. So I knew something was really, 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 really bad. And then feeling the intense burning feeling all over my body, and just knowing from past injuries that like when you cut yourself really bad, it feels like a burn. And I've burnt myself really bad. I was like, okay, something really bad has happened to my entire body. And it's more intense in other places. One of which was my private parts. And I thought, oh my God, somehow I was castrated in an accident or whatever happened. And that's where my 18-year-old mind went to. But going back to the scene for a moment, this woman that I had seen in this out-of-body experience turned out to be a Indian American, as in from India, and now an American citizen, trauma nurse from a local hospital that had just been leaving her Siddha Yoga ashram on a very special day. It was Guru Mai, who is the actual guru from Eat, Pray, Love, the book and movie. It was her birthday, and she happened to be in from India in New York State, about a mile from where my accident just happened, and it was Guru Mai's birthday on June 24th of 2003, which became my new birthday. So Janet, this nurse, had just left Guru Mai's birthday and was dressed in all of her Siddha Yoga spiritual garb, these beautiful flowing colored dresses, and she was the only person of the thousands of people that were passing at the moment to stop and help. The other people that stopped were yelling at her to get away from the car, that it was going to blow up, and that I was dead already. She screamed back, "If you're not going to help this boy, get out of here and leave me your shirts." She took one of the shirts that were thrown to her, and she wrapped my scalped skull back into place so she could stabilize my neck and help get me out of the car. The only other people to help were a tattooed Harley Davidson big bearded guy and his wife, who actually ran across 8 lanes of rush hour traffic highway after they hopped off their motorcycle because they saw us flipping. And all 3 of these people asked themselves, or asked God, as they said it, what they should do. And they were all told in their minds, this is what they told me independently, that they heard the word help. And they came and they helped and they saved my life. And that was Janet, Chris, and I do apologize, I'm forgetting Chris's wife's name. And it'll come to me later. Remind you, I had a severe traumatic brain injury that specifically affected my retention of new memories and processing of new memories. And that is documented, and that's another story for another day. But so they pull me out of this car, and at this point, I think very soon after, the ambulance showed up, and the typical United States paramedics get out of the ambulance, and they said, "Oh my God, that's so crazy, that's horrible," to me, while I'm in this state. And the woman, Janet, said, "Do your job, get this boy to the hospital and try to save his life." So Janet actually didn't leave any of her information to anybody because, as she said later to her, I guess it's floor director or whatever at the hospital, whoever is the supervisor, she said she didn't want to share her information because she thought that there was no way I was going to survive. Now, this is a trauma nurse who sees people coming into the hospital like me every day, and she thought that I was not going to survive. But I did. And soon after, my parents were calling around all the local hospitals trying to look for this Indian nurse that saved the boy, and finally found somebody who said she thinks she has the nurse. But Janet actually denied it because she didn't want to hear that I had died, and her supervisor was persistent. It was like, "No, the mother and father want to thank you for rescuing their son and saving his life. And long story short, I'm going to get back into some of the accent a little bit more. Long story short, for Janet's story, within a year or two, she was actually nominated for a Red Cross Hero of the Year Award, National Hero of the Year Award, and she won. And she was honored down in Washington, D.C. by the entire National Red Cross Committee and whomever. And I might not be getting the details correct, but you can also research that and look that up. Research the Guru Mai thing and the Elizabeth Gilbert connection. That's a very interesting thing. And the birthday thing. So to quickly touch on that birthday thing, if you study Siddha Yoga, Guru Mai, Swami Muktananda, and all of their predecessors, they had a process of sharing their consciousness with an initiated or a follower called Shaktipat. And that seems to be what happened to me that day. And now we can dive into reincarnation and that this was a plan from other lifetimes that we had and this was going to happen to me, blah, 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 shamanic initiation. Yeah, it's all there. It's all crazy. And it's all led me to this point right here, right now. The mystical stuff aside, for those of you who have not experienced weird fairy tale-like movie scripted type cartoon realities like I have, here's the real reality, the human reality of this story. When I arrived at the hospital, finally, I had second and third degree burns on 80% of my body from my knees to my shoulders, front and back, and I had swallowed the scalding gasoline too, so I also had it in my lungs and esophagus. Burns. Burns everywhere. I had 6 or 7 fractures in my C6, C7 cervical vertebrae. I had about 4 to 5 fractures in my L4, L5 vertebrae, and it's funny the numbers line up like that. And I shattered my tailbone, which is also known as the coccyx. And I still had my penis and coccyx. In real life, it did not get burnt off or chopped off in the accident. I just had severe chemical burns on that sensitive skin that you have in your private areas. So you can only imagine what a small burn feels like. Then imagine scalding gasoline soaking into your flesh, continuing to burn you the whole time, and then being in such a sensitive area, like your private parts. So that was a painful, not so fun experience and took a long time to heal. My skin actually peeled off. Well, first it blistered for a couple of weeks. So I had blisters that were the size of baseballs, tennis balls, golf balls all over my back and stomach and chest. Thankfully, not in many other areas of my body, because it seemed where my shirt was holding on to the gasoline was where I got burnt the most. So those blisters became these big pus-filled sacs, and eventually they would burst and they'd dry up, and then I would have all of this skin like molting off of me like a snake or a lizard. And after, I would have pink skin, and there's photos of this somewhere online too, but I had pink skin like a baby mouse for a month or so as my skin healed itself from the inside out. I had about 600 total stitches, 550 or so of those being in my head and face. I have a 14-inch scar that was a 14-inch laceration that goes up from the right side of my neck back behind my ear. It took my right ear off. It goes up over my head all the way to the other side, where the hairline meets on the left side of my scalp. I had a hole in my face, in my cheek, the size of a quarter, and that was another dozen stitches or so. I almost lost my right eye. It was, the bones are slightly crushed in that right eye socket, and my super kind brother, a decade after, would continue to comment that he thought I had a black eye, and did I get in a fight last night and get beat up, like this weird condescending small ego thing he has. Knowing very well that I have these scars and stuff from an accident that he experienced as well as my younger brother. But he and my mother have a very strange, disassociative, psyche that's kind of shared consciousness, the two of them. And like I've witnessed my mother actually saying to people that were speaking to her about my accident, that I wasn't even in an accident, and they were like, yes, he was, and she was like, oh, well, it wasn't that bad. And like, I don't know why people diminish things, their own traumas and other people's traumas, to like pretend that they don't happen so they don't have to deal with them. But yeah, anyway, here I am not diminishing what I've been through in all aspects of this accident. So yeah, that's my face injuries. And then as we start moving down, I severed my left tricep. I had what seemed to be a compound dislocation of my left shoulder. So it poked through my skin, and it kind of looks like a large bullet wound right now. And it's also covered with a tattoo currently, which most of my tattoos are covering tons of scars. Not to cover the scars, but just because I like tattoos and I happen to have scars everywhere, so it happens. A bunch of slices in my arms that required stitches. I had a knuckle that was torn off. The skin was just torn off, and they didn't stitch it up because there was so much other stuff. So one day, weeks after the accident, when this nurse I had coming to my house was debriefing me, which is taking the dead skin off of my body in the shower, I looked down to my finger, and there was a flap of skin. How do I say this? About, you know, the size of a small pinky finger on my middle finger. So my middle knuckle, the middle knuckle, so not your like knuckle that you punch with, the one right below that, there was a pinky size chunk of that skin flapping over where you have those creases in your finger there when you bend your finger. So now my creases are healed crookedly because this was not sewn up. And when the nurse saw it, she goes, "Oop, I guess they forgot about something." And you could see my bone because there's no flesh there if you feel your knuckle. So I was like looking at my bone and I was moving it up and down. She's like, "What is he doing?" And she looks at it and she sees that there's no skin and it's just the bone moving. And I was like anatomically or biomechanically just interpreting it because I didn't feel any pain anymore. I'd been through so much that like something like that was not going to ail me in any way. It was more interesting and like a scientific curiosity. Oh, what happens when you move your bones and there's kind of ligaments attached still and it's not a skeleton? And she saw that I was doing this and quickly pushed the skin flap back over the bone. I was like, "Oop, I guess they forgot about that. I'll fix that after the shower." And she taped it up, and a few days later when she took the tape off, it was starting to heal itself back together. So, but now it's cool because it healed crooked and I have a small pocket of air in there, so I could, you know, if I ever wanted to transport something illegally across borders, I could put it in this little pocket in my finger and they would never find it. Just kidding. But anyway, moving down, I have a hole in my back that was also a similar flap, and you could see my spine, and they saw fractures in my spine through this flap, which was very curious. And then thankfully, my lower body, nothing really happened, because then all the injuries started to go inside of me. And let's start with the weird ones, and then we'll get to the serious ones. So the weird ones are, because my body was so charred and burnt, and we had just been in this car accident, like I was not just a burn victim, but I was ripped around in a car while being burnt, and there was broken glass and gravel and paint and metal. All of those things, everything I just said, glass included, healed itself into my skin in various places as the burns were healing themselves. It almost was like, having wet concrete and throwing stuff in the wet concrete. Like when the concrete dries, it's going to dry it with it in there. That's what happened to me. So I still to this day have a piece of glass in my stomach that over the years, a couple of times I've attempted to get out on my own and it just terrified me. I've got tons of gravel stuck in me still everywhere from my head, my stomach, my arms, hands, knees, anywhere that was really, you know, affected by any scraping. A lot of the little pebbles that I had in my knees, just above my kneecaps, I used to actually pop out with a knife, and I had a bunch around my belly button too, and I started doing it my belly button one day and realized, oh my God, like if I sneeze or cough or I, you know, kind of get frightened for some reason, like I'm going to stab myself in the stomach. So I stopped doing that very quickly, and this is, you know, a year after the accident I was doing this, just because it was very strange to me to have all these foreign objects in my body now. And it wasn't really a thing like a doctor was going to do anything about. So I took it into my own hands, literally, and started popping pebbles out of my knee with a hunting knife. So those are kind of the interesting things. I still to this day have rocks and dirt and paint probably, and who knows, shards of metal and glass stuck in me and just a part of me now forever. The toughest part of what I went through was the traumatic brain injury and losing any ability to save new memories, because I had a photographic memory prior. I'm back to that now, thankfully, through a lot of hard, grueling, devastating hard work and faith and miracles. Just, I think, with me, a bunch of miracles happened. Maybe my story and my experiences and how I've naturally just kind of survived these things that debilitate any other person that goes through a fraction of what I've gone through or is just a story to give other people hope. I'm not saying I'm special. I mean, we're all special. I do have some genetic markers that have allowed me to heal quicker. I have a much higher concentration of hemoglobin than most other people. And that facilitates, you know, oxygen delivery to cells through a specific protein. Helps with healing, helps with metabolism, helps with a few other things. But I don't think it could have saved me from being decapitated and crushed in the accident the way I should have been, and the other weird miracles of the guys exiting the car without explanation, and Janet showing up right in time, of all people to show up, and, you know, the most capable person possible shows up to help after she just left the spiritual, like, special day where her guru was there, like, blessing everybody. It was... I can thank a lot of miracles for this too. And I think, you know, if we start to acknowledge that miracles do work through people and through the world and through nature, that they might start coming to us more. I've acknowledged this for a long time, and it seems that's why it's found me so often in my life, that I've been through really tough, terrible things that can break a person in 10 different ways. And I don't think I've allowed anything to break me. I may have struggled at times, and I may have gotten depressed and wanted to give up on myself, but here I am. Never gave up, never quit on anything, always worked harder for everything, and, you know, realized when there's a time to move on with some things, you move on with some things so you can do better things. And that was true with me for soccer, that was true with me for my gym, and that was true with me with certain relationships and I've had to move on from, despite how much I wanted them in my life forever. So dying in a car accident and suffering through all that pain was the first thing that I can remember, the most important thing in my life that has led me to where I am today, and the joy that I get to experience every day and living my dream every single day. And everybody's dreams are different. I realized years ago, when I was on the trajectory to potentially being a multimillionaire, or maybe even bigger than that, if we brought in funding, I could have been a billionaire with my brand. And I didn't want it. I saw the people that were doing that with their brands, and they were not happy. Lots of them were not honest and living genuine, authentic lives. And if anything, they were investing in this plan so that they could do what I'm doing right now 20, 30 years from now. And I just thought, how can I bypass that? How can I skip this giant money-making scheme, which is ultimately not going to make me happy, because I know very clearly about myself, money is not something that makes me happy. It's experiences and being in nature and being at peace and being in love. And money has nothing to do with that with the right people. So to be on a trajectory of an entrepreneur going to potential, you know, funding rounds with you know, capital investment groups and partnerships and taking on all this responsibility, and not even just responsibility, but burden, I would call it, you know, having to scale a company from 15 employees to 15,000 employees over 10 years. Like, I want nothing to do with that. And the money that was potentially on the other side of that was becoming less and less appealing because I saw myself sacrificing freedom, peace, happiness, flexibility, the way I dress. Immediately I would have had to be in, you know, suits and fancier clothes, and I was really happy wearing shorts and a t-shirt every day or my own Temple Kinesis tank top. And I thought the only way I would see my life progressing in a positive way is if I could wear less clothes and go down to just the bathing suit and have more space and more opportunity to, you know, do what I love where I live and not to have to own a house and then have a business at a separate location because it's the way things are in the U.S. And then, you know, to be so proximal to other people, I was like, man, the deeper I get into building and scaling my brand and business, the more people I'm going to have to interact with, you know, the more I'm going to have to go to these social functions to connect with networking entities. And I don't want to do that. That might be success for you all. That might seem and feel like success before you get to success. But I've seen, I've become friends with and had the grace to become, you know, not only work colleagues with, but really good, close friends with people that have more wealth than they know what to do with, and they're lonely, they feel isolated, they are constantly, at least the good ones, are constantly trying to give their money back to other people in areas that need it more. So it's almost, to me, objectively, like they wasted all their time making all that money and like kind of, you know, getting old while they could have been doing the things they are doing now. And they could have been doing that the whole time. And then if one day they wanted to go back and make a ton of money, they could. But like, these are people that made good money and could have done all these things 30 years earlier, but didn't because they were so hooked on the culture of make the money, make the money, make the money, and retire when you're old. And it's just a trick. And maybe me dying at 18... gave me a different perspective of, you know, okay, today's my last day. What am I going to do with it? And I only want to do the things that make my heart happy, not necessarily my pocket happy or, you know, make my ego feel like it's a superhero, but to make my heart feel like it's one with God. Like, I found the secret to the universe, and I haven't always felt this way, and I don't feel this way every day because sometimes we lose track of the present and I think about the things in my past, and that's more what it is. The future to me is this and an expansion of what I'm doing here every day, and I've found my perfect place and space and happiness, so it can only get better. Where I was before, I was constantly searching for other things and trying to process my past without having the space and opportunity to do so. I was constantly in this rush of, okay, everybody wants me to create these brands, and I'm good at creating these brands, and I can help them create their brands, and let me do this, and let me build this project, and let me help with this project, and let me help these homeless people, and let me help this, and let me do this, and I lost track of myself, and that's why I closed my gym, because I'd become a robot for everybody else. I'd become this image that wasn't my authentic self, and I needed to get back into the forest. And when I was in the forest, I realized this is where I belong, but how can I turn this into a livelihood, into a lifestyle, and not just be like this forest-dwelling mystic that, you know, gives away all of my goods and just lives there? Because I realized that no matter how much I have or what I have or how long I have it, it's never going to bring me to a happier point than I am right now, right here, with myself and with the things that I have. Very minimal. And I do have possessions here. Like, while we're talking, I'm looking at, you know, a $10,000 amethyst wing set, a bunch of wooden Buddhas from Bali, about 500 books, 1,000 DVDs, like, art all over my walls. But these are my memories, and these are my investments. And I realized at some point that I had achieved and accumulated all of the things that I had ever dreamed about when I was in college and when I was in high school. And I had healed myself. And I had healed myself to such a point that I had opened a business to help heal other people. And unfortunately for me, for everybody else, it was a great thing business-wise and education-wise, but I opened it to become an ascension center, like what I'm doing here and offering, you know, connections with nature and a deeper connection with peace and a detachment from the matrix, you know, kind of Babylon reality. And I wasn't able to do that in Northern New Jersey, even with my partnership with the Weiss Center, and we were up in the Northern Green Forest and the beautiful areas there. Everybody still had to drive home and go back to chaos and experience road rage and you know, exorbitant prices for little value in a country that doesn't really care about them anymore. And it was almost like I was going to a zoo to do massage therapy on the animals that have been enslaved and tortured for 20 years of their lives. And I felt like, wow, okay, I'm the closest step I can possibly get to my dream in the area I'm from, but I'm still 10 steps away from it being possible because those 10 steps would never be achieved simply because what I wanted to do there, I could only have done 500 years before, or maybe 100 years in the future from now, depending on how things go. So that the accident kept coming back in my head. It was like, dude, like at 18 you died. And I was approaching, when I closed my gym, I was about 33, 34. So I was approaching the point in my life where I had lived just as many years after my accident than I had before. And I felt like, okay, wow, so this is my new graduation. Like, I had these 18 years to grow up again, to become this new being, renewed, who I was free to become after this accident that took everything away from me. It took my body, my mind, my hopes, my potential, my dreams, and it reset me in a way that I had never experienced anybody around me being reset. So I had to have a conversation with the universe constantly, with God constantly, and it wasn't always a good conversation. Since I was 18, since the accident happened, I've been in this continuous dialogue with the universe, trying to figure out why and what should I be doing here with this chance that you've given me. And I felt like I was doing so much for other people that I lost track of doing what was good and right for myself. And as soon as I made that realization, oh my God, like, what happens if 18 years after my 18th again, I die, I go through another experience and I die? Like, do I want to be doing this, or do I want to live up everything I've ever dreamed about, everything I've told my friends about as my dreams? And that was the day that I sent the email out and closed my gym, because the accident reminded me that I did not have much time left. And of course, my father had just passed away, and I thought, wow, like, I really might not have much time left. And the strangest part, and I'm going to kind of end it here, is that I was never, from the age 18 until 33, able to see my future past the age 33. It would just stop. It would be blank. I could not imagine anything past that age. And I guess I realized, okay, this is the year that I just have to make a major, major change in my reality and go back to, you know, everything and, you know, every attribute that I loved about myself and about reality when I was like a kid, before any of, you know, the opinions and the impressions of other people and, you know, things in society started to influence me. Who was I? What did I love to do naturally? And very maybe that brought me back into the same forest that I was in when I was a kid that age, that my father introduced me to. That was the, you know, Ramapo tribe's native land, the Lenni Lenape land for thousands of years, and a food forest. And, you know, I was stumbling across black raspberry trees, bushes, raspberry bushes, black cherry trees, blueberry bushes everywhere. And I was like, wow, why don't I live back here in a small little cabin and I could just feed myself off this land always? And I started learning properly again, the way I never learned as a kid, the way I should have when I was in those woods, and the way I never learned as an adult. And I thought to myself, I'm so naive. Everybody's been looking at me like I'm this big expert, and I just came into the forest and became a student in an instant. And this jungle, this forest can teach me everything. And why am I reading hundreds of books and studying all these documentaries and listening to interviews when ultimately it's nature that teaches us? And, you know, we, I think, have to strip ourselves of all of our definitions and the things that we know ourselves to be true, and let nature surprise us. Let life surprise us every once in a while, because when I opened up to that, I entered a portal that transported me to here. Beautiful Costa Rica, summer all the time, birds chirping, everything you would see in a zoo here right in my own yard that I can look at for free. I don't know if you could tell in the pause in my conversation sometimes, but I have a feeling and state of peace and happiness that I've never felt ever, not for a moment in my lifetime prior to moving here and experiencing this. And I'm so grateful for my accident, for dying in a car accident when I was 18, because it has accelerated me getting to this point. And whatever divine plan the Creator and the universe and I came up with before I was born here, November 22nd, 1984, it's quite extraordinary, and I'm very grateful for it. And I'm very grateful, honestly, to see people that have suffered through a lot, scarred people, handicapped people, because these, I believe, are the people quickest on the path during this eon for humans to enlightenment. I think everybody else has too much complications in their life, and they're too much vanity, too much ego, and they can't see clearly to who they are in their hearts and spirits anymore. And I think it's much easier for somebody who has had things stripped from them that they once valued a lot, and they need to find another value system and look within themselves, or somebody that never had that opportunity that envies that in other people and has overcome envy because it doesn't do anything for them. They have no competitive state with a so-called normal human. You know, if you're heavily scarred from burns or you've been paralyzed, you know you've got to start to develop and cultivate different parts of yourself and see different parts of reality to get joy out of again. And most of the time, when we get to that point, we're actually finally experiencing authentic and genuine reality. I think everything else creates blinders. And the more we stay, you know, safe and well and protected in society, we don't risk things, we don't, you know, look at ourselves truly, it just leads to more compounded confusion, and we wrap more of those, you know, that old Russian doll, we're not opening them up to find what's in the center, we're adding more layers on top as a society, and that's confusing everybody and taking a lot of people away from themselves. And unfortunately, sometimes it takes a severely traumatic event and a lot of pain suffered through to get to this point. But my hope with sharing this is if you're currently going through the suffering or you're experiencing some trauma, whether residual from the past or it's something you're actually going through right now, traumatic, take that as the best tool and opportunity for you to manifest your destiny, to create your ultimate reality and your dreams, because it's an opportunity that not everybody gets, and not everybody's privileged enough to have the insight in during to know that it's there for their benefit and not for their defeat and their detriment. you know, if it was meant to defeat you, it would have killed you. Do you understand that? Defeat is death. If something in life you experience, no matter how traumatic and painful, does not kill you, it did not defeat you. You survived it. You won. And now life has granted you an opportunity to prove to yourself what you're made of. And you might not fix whatever problem. You might not be paralyzed and walk again one day. You might not, you know, be in third-degree burns covered in your whole face and body and be able to look like you looked like before. But you're going to develop abilities and beauty that you never imagined yourself having before, that you're going to value way, way, way more than the things you valued prior to whatever occurred to you. And that I can guarantee, because I've seen it in so many other people. We could just look at something simple as sudden savant syndrome. People that go through traumatic incidents, accidents, they're stuck in comas, they have bad diseases, they wake up, and they have incredibly skilled new talents, mindsets, calculation abilities, intellectual abilities, emotional awareness. There's something to this, like the M. Night Shyamalan movies, you know, the series. Oh, what is it? Glass. I'm forgetting the name. Split. And the other one, the original one with Bruce Willis, Unbreakable. Sometimes, in reality, and maybe a lot of times, I guess it's the, you know, mindset of the person that's going through it and their support system or lack thereof. You know, traumas can create superheroes. And I believe truly in my heart and soul, because I know what I experience in reality, and I've seen other people, and I've also seen other people witness things that they've never thought was possible from somebody that they thought was maybe a little less than. And that's what, you know, proves to me that both miracles are true, and that, you know, there's something going on in the universe that, yeah, when we get traumatized and we're able to pick ourselves up and push and work through it, it creates a better version of ourselves always. And that's a curious concept, and that's what I'm going to leave it with here, is that, you know, whatever you're going through right now, traumatically, painfully, that, interestingly, is probably the thing that you need most to become what you've always dreamed to become and who you know in your heart you are meant to be. So go with it. Embrace it. Don't dwell in it. But realize that if it didn't kill you, you won. And that there is no way it can defeat you. You're just going to continue winning. And the more you win, the more miracles you're going to magnetize into your reality. So thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed. I will be back soon with another story.